Everyone, we are back. Oh my gosh, it feels so weird to be actually doing this. To be fair, we did try
about a few weeks ago,
and then I didn't like it. And then anywho, regardless, we are back. We are so excited, and this episode is definitely going to be a doozy.
It's not good.
None of them are good.
The episode is good.
Yeah,
obviously, but the person. It's not good. And I didn't realize how not good he was.
Yeah.
Until I did it.
I think it's universal that we know that he's bad, but I think now you know, like,
I knew
how
that I bad. Found out the nitty gritty details and I just never want to eat again.
Ooh. But before we talk about that, I think we should address our 7-year hiatus that we took. Life
Sorry
happens.
Sorry we ghosted you for 7 months.
A lot of things were going on. We figured it out. We're back. We have better microphones. We have better sound equipment. So hopefully we sound better to you guys. Hopefully we're not sharing one mic.
In the middle of your closet.
In the middle of my closet, yeah.
Which is not that big, might I add.
It's not. No, you're correct. But we're back. We figured it out. We're super excited. We're coming back with a bunch of new content. So hopefully you guys are still with us and are ready to continue with us. But yeah, I just want to throw that in there because I feel like it'd be really awkward to not address how
the
we didn't
elephant in the fucking
how
room.
We didn't post
the
for 7 months.
The 7 month old elephant in the room.
Happy New Year, by the way, everyone.
Happy New Year. Happy Halloween. It was Candace's birthday. It was my birthday. And then it was Candace's birthday again.
It's so bad.
We're fine. I was just going to say, as we know, Amelia's really good at ghosting, so might as well ghost our listeners too.
What? No, don't say that. You're throwing yourself, you're literally running yourself over.
No, it's true.
As you guys know, we do the drink of the week, and we're still doing that. We're not changing that. However, this week, our drink is nothing extremely difficult to make because all you need is Celsius, because we're currently
or Red Bull,
but we're currently addicted to Celsius. Mm-hmm. I think like everyone is, and vodka.
You're forgetting one key ingredient.
What?
The good old college try. Oh.
So
if you have ever been over 21, you will have known this drink at any party that has ever existed ever. It is your chaser and your spirit.
Yep. And that's what we're doing. We're getting in the spirit.
Yep.
So maybe just count this as like a free...
Throwback Thursday.
Yeah. Or like a free drink. Like make your favorite drink and then come and watch this. What
exactly.
The fuck? How are they going to watch this?
I don't know.
What's the word?
Listen.
Listen.
Okay. One Direction. If I'm louder.
Probably gonna make a lot of sense once we start drinking this. We're gonna finally actually understand what they're saying. Go ahead and make that drink, come back, and then let's get into this case because it's like really fucking crazy.
Fuck. All right, kids, strap up, ready to go. Jeffrey Dahmer, the cannibal of Milwaukee. So actually, I kind of fucked up because the whole reason I picked this case was because I thought he was from Ohio. He's not. He lived in Ohio for a short period of time. But he's actually from Milwaukee, so I need to fact check myself next time.
For those listening that don't know, it's because that's Amelia's home state.
That's my home state. Don't stalk me, though.
What?
I don't know. They could find me.
Okay, so maybe if you don't want people to stalk you, don't be on a public podcast in which is linked to your personal Instagram.
Oopsie.
In your whole life. Oopsie. Like, maybe let's start there.
Let's do that. All right, ladies, and only ladies, because fuck men. This week we are bringing you a new episode about Jeffrey Dahmer, the cannibal of Milwaukee. Obviously know about his story, or if you don't, what have you been doing living under a fucking rock?
Yeah, I think we all are under the general understanding that he is a shit human. Just how shit is he?
Oh, well, I will answer that for you. All right, so he was born in 1960. Okay, this week we're talking about Jeffrey Dahmer. The crazy cannibal of Milwaukee. Anyways, okay, so Jeffrey Dahmer was born in 1960 in Milwaukee on May 21st. And later on, his dad will come out and say that while his mom was pregnant with him, that she was taking a lot of medicine, like for her mind, like psychological meds. And he thinks that some of the medications that she was taking, he said that she had been taking 26 different tablets of medications after being pregnant, and that she was diagnosed twice for depression and she had attempted suicide.
all while she was pregnant or just like in her lifetime?
In her lifetime. Oh, okay, but while she was pregnant specifically, she was on a bunch of meds.
Oh.
And later on, it came out that those were dangerous to take if you were pregnant. So like, did some of that fuck with him?
Yeah.
We don't know. So basically at a young age, he had a pretty good start, like loving family. But then around age 4, he had a double hernia surgery, and it was to remove hernias from his scrotum. So this hernia was on a more private part of his body. Obviously he's a younger kid, doesn't probably know what's going on. He was worried that his genitals were removed during surgery, and he remembers really bad groin pain. So, like, he wasn't old when he had the surgery. You gotta take it with a grain of salt. He was 4. Later on, we'll see some of the stuff that he does with the bodies of the people that he kills, and people wonder, did having that surgery at such a young age and that, like, weird fear about, like, your private parts being removed, did that have an impact on his life? So, at a young age, like, had a surgery. Happens. And then when he was 5, he apparently tricked his friend into getting his hand stuck inside a wasp nest. So like he told his little pal, like, go put your hand in there. He's one of those kids.
Okay.
And then his family moved from Milwaukee to Ohio when he was around 8 years old, where he moved to Akron, Ohio.
Is that a good place? I don't know Ohio. So like, is that like a
I've not really been around Akron. I think that's like a rich neighborhood, I could probably be really middle class. Fucking wrong.
It's like
the lowest of the lows.
If you're from there, we just don't know. Sorry.
I'm from Ohio, but I don't know you. So again, as he's a child, he had a relatively normal upbringing. His mom was dealing with some mental issues, like some depression, but she was as loving as she could be with dealing with her own demons.
Mm-hmm.
His dad, Lionel Dahmer, was a senior research chemist at PPG Industries in Ohio. And so he was like this really smart analytical chemistry guy, which I don't know what analytical chemistry is. I took beginner chemistry in college, like not even the 100 level. I took like 055 and I got like a C.
Good. Biology.
Anyways, while he's growing up, everything seems to be fine. No like obvious warning signs to his parents, at least. But when he's a kid, he really, really loves to like go underneath his deck and pick up animal bones that he finds in there, which, okay, I'm not going to hate on little children that like go around and like find random weird shit. Cause like when you're a kid, it's like a treasure hunt.
Yeah,
okay.
That's true.
When I was a kid and I would go around my farm and like I found rabbit bones everywhere cause we had coyotes, I was not about to touch that shit and pick it up. My mom told me those gave me diseases. So I was like staying far away from those. And also I loved bunnies. Mm. So I'm not gonna go pick up a bunch of animal bones. That's scary as a kid.
Yeah.
But not to little Jeffrey Dahmer. He loved that. He liked to take them, pick them up, put them in a bucket and like rattle them around like a little fucking rattle toy. But his parents were like, that's fine.
Maybe because they thought like, oh, he likes archaeology. Is that, that's when you dig up shit, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, good. I'm smart. I went to college. Maybe they were like, oh, he's going to be like an archaeologist. He loves finding bones. Maybe. I'm just saying like, maybe that was a thought.
Maybe. But okay, you're on the right track. So his dad being a chemist, Jeffrey had an interest in like bleaching the bones when he was young. And his dad was like, oh, yes, he's interested in chemistry and mixing chemicals together and making cool shit happen. And so like his dad was super into it. And so like that was their like pastime together.
Yeah.
They would like fuck around with bones and like put them in different chemical substances.
And I'm sure that came up later.
It does.
Yeah.
Of course it does.
Okay. Fuck.
So another thing playing into his life, when he was 5, he had a little baby brother that was born. And so around this time, like his parents' attention is diverted to the baby of the family.
Classic.
But again, I feel like to all of our listeners out there, at least one or two of you have a sibling. And I'm sure you're not a murderer. Well, we don't know that. But I hope you're not a murderer.
Imagine a murderer listening to your podcast.
Oh my God.
Just
I freaking hope
murders.
Not. Oh Lord. But going back to that. So like his attention is being diverted away from him and his family is, you know, probably spending a little bit less time on him trying to keep a baby alive, you know, doing all that jazz.
Parent.
Yeah. God, that sucks for you. Long story short, Jeffrey's dad, like this time that he's spending like fucking around with these animal bones, like that's their shit. They love to do it together. Like play with bleach, chemicals, and like it's a fun time. No warning signs, apparently. I can see warning signs. I don't know if that's just me. So he starts high school and he was pretty relatively quiet. And then at around age 14, he starts having an alcohol problem. He's taking alcohol to school. He's hiding it in his jacket during class, like chugging it. He was known as like the class clown, probably because he was drunk all the time. He would make fun of people with cerebral palsy by imitating them and would like pretend to have seizures in class, like to make fun of people that have seizures. So he was
becoming a fucking asshole.
Yes, he's becoming an asshole. The act of doing that then became known around his school as like doing a Dahmer. When you make fun of people like that.
Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And so like around this time, he realizes that he is gay too. So he...
Wow, what an experience.
Yeah, man. Right? And so he starts to like fantasize these like violent sexual fantasies. And I don't honestly know where it started. We'll see later on, like something does trigger him, but I don't know how he realized like, this is my kink.
Yeah.
Which also that is not a kink. That is a problem. But like that was his thing.
Yeah.
And so he talks about like wanting to dominate and have complete control over his male partner.
Did he ever, I'm assuming he didn't like openly come out in high school and was like, I'm gay.
No, not to my knowledge, at least.
Okay. I also haven't heard of it. That's why I was just wondering maybe if you.
And I'm sure that probably like fed into a lot of his fantasies. Like you can't be open about it. And so suppressing it, maybe that like
keeping it a secret
made his like, fantasies more violent because he knows he can't tell people. So it's just like harboring it. Yeah. Anchory? Like putting anchory. Yep.
Okay.
So that's around like 14. He's like going to school, making fun of people, getting heavily involved in alcohol. When he's 16, he realizes there's this really, really attractive jogger that runs through his neighborhood very frequently, same schedule every day. And so like at age 16, he's fantasizing about how to kill him. Like that is his.
Oh, kill him?
Yes, kill him.
It's not like, oh, I want to like sleep with him. I want to touch his pee-pee. No, it's just like,
he wants to kill him. So he
there's several steps there.
Yep. Nope. He shot straight to the top of that danger ladder and he took a nosedive off of it to murder. He sees this jogger. He's really attracted to him and he's like fantasizing about killing him. And so he does. This is not funny. I apologize for laughing. So Jeffrey goes around his neighborhood, finds a spot in the woods to hide in and starts to stalk him. And so he'll watch him run by and he'll just like get off on this like power dynamic that like he does have the potential to kill him, but he's not killing him yet. So he's like stalking this dude. And then one day he's like, this is the day I'm going to kill him. And so he brings a baseball bat and then he hides in the woods. But on that very same day, the jogger didn't run. He didn't go by. And so he avoided being his first victim.
Lucky.
Yep. And so that's around age 16. Later in May of that year, his parents divorced. And his mom actually took his brother, David, who was his younger brother by 5 years. And they moved out of state. And his dad had actually previously moved out of the house before then during the separation. So Jeffrey's all by himself now. And apparently his dad didn't give a fuck. Like, no one cares that this kid is just living there all by himself.
And this, like, no one thought, like, maybe he's struggling. Like,
nope.
Maybe he needs some guidance.
Nope. Okay. So his mom and dad divorced in, like, 1978 when he was around 18. And his mom moves away. And then Jeffrey's still living at his dad's house. But his dad's never there because he's always working. And so in June of 1978, after he graduated high school, he picks up this hitchhiker named Stephen Hicks. And Stephen was really young. I think he was like in his, late teens, early 20s. Dahmer was like, come back to my house. Like, let's have a beer. Let's just hang out. And so the guy was like, yeah, sure. That sounds great. And so they go back to the house. They're hanging out. And Jeffrey Dahmer, obviously, like,
he has an alternative motive.
Yeah, he's got this alternative motive.
But really quickly, before you dive into that, what is it with hitchhiking?
Like, I don't know. Let's ask Kyle, because Kyle obviously has lots of experience with hitchhiking. Yeah. And he was never killed.
If I'm hitchhiking, I run 50-50 chance that the car that I'm getting into is safe, because they could be a fucking killer.
Yes.
And I could be literally walking into the lion's den. You know what I mean? But then also, if I'm the driver, I don't know what would possess me to ever do this, but like if I pick up a hitchhiker, again, I could be welcoming like a fucking psycho in my car. Like, it's,
you're playing with your own fate.
I don't understand it.
You're playing
sometimes with I don't even want to pick up my own friends.
No,
let alone a stranger on the side of the road.
Yeah, no, fuck that shit.
I'm sorry, I had to ask because I know that that's becoming a common thing, and it's becoming even more common because millennials and Gen Zs, more Gen Zs, are so freaking trusting.
I'm not.
And also, okay, it's really weird. They're trusting, but also just like don't give a fuck about like their safety. Like I feel like a lot of
I give a lot of fucks about my safety and I trust no one. Yes,
but I think a lot of Gen Zs, it's that whole stereotype of like we don't really care what happens to us, we just want to have a good time type of thing. I know that's it's
called a vibe.
I am what's it called when you are generalizing Gen Z. I know not everyone thinks that way, but most, from at least what I'm seeing from TikTok, which is very educational and all facts all the time, is that you get the vibe. Like Gen Z's is more of like the I'll fight for you, but like fucking I don't really care if I die, like it's whatever, like I'm already over living.
Couldn't be me.
And it also couldn't. I don't even know. I can't.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even trust friends that I get in fights with because I think they're going to fucking stalk me and murder me in my sleep. I don't trust nobody.
I wasn't going to murder you, but.
You know I'm not talking about you.
Now I might. I'm not going to murder her. I'm saying sorry now. I'm not going to murder you.
Anyways, so Stephen Hicks is at his house. They're drinking beers together. And all Stephen wants to do is talk about girls. Well, not all he wants to do, but like he brings up the fact that he's interested in women. Instead of being a normal fucking human and being like, oh, this person's not into me, that's fine. So when Stephen wants to leave, he's like sitting in a chair. He's like, yeah, man, I want to go. Instead of being normal and Dahmer being like, oh, yeah, like head on your merry way. Peace out. He like picks up a dumbbell, like a weight, and goes up from the back of him and whacks him in the head with it and kills him. And then he used the body for his own sexual pleasure. So he's being a necrophiliac. And then later on, when he realizes, oh shit, I have this body, what am I going to do with it? He goes back to his childhood fun with his dad. His roots. He buries the body, goes back, unburies it, and he like dissolved the flesh in acid and then flushed it down the toilet. And then he took the bones and then crushed them. He put them in a bag and crushed them with a sledgehammer and then scattered them in the backyards behind his house.
Does that work?
Yeah. It worked for him for a long time. That's really? How he
that was his method?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm just like surprised that that worked.
I was surprised too, yeah.
I always thought that somehow they always find that shit.
They do. They will eventually find traces of the people that he did this to, but it was like in the 70s, so they didn't find it yet.
So like now, into 2021, it might not have worked as well.
No, because especially in cases like that have happened, or where they try to get rid of the body, but they flush the blood down this drain the shower drain or the bathtub.
Yeah, like to like wash
they
off.
Always find like the crime scene investigators know. They'll go in when they're doing their search and they'll look at the trap, like the, I don't know what kind of it is, but there's like a something trap like, for hair or like debris in your sink, and they'll pull it and they'll test that and they can see if there's blood like human fluids on it. That would obviously like
idiot.
So like he's not doing too hot. He just murdered someone. Mm-hmm. Nobody ever knew. Nobody found out. Well, obviously we did, but
yeah, but at the time. So it wasn't like a big investigation started to find this guy.
Nope.
Like he
was a hitchhiker. He was young. He was on his way to a concert in Ohio when he got picked up. He was not found for a long time. So that was in June. And then in August, Jeffrey enrolls in Ohio State University, then drops after 3 months. His GPA was a whopping 0.45.
Ooh. Oh, Jeff.
Yep. Ooh. He was getting too drunk all the time, not taking any of his classes
seriously.
So
he was still having his drinking problem. So his drinking problem has, and since he started, 14?
14.
It stays there.
And so he goes back to live with his dad. His dad's like, dude, you got a problem. You got to do something with your life. Join the army. So Jeffrey joins the army. In 1979, he joined the army because his dad told him to. He was a medical specialist and did training at Fort Sam Housing in San Antonio, Texas.
I was going to say Fort Sam.
Yeah.
That sounds familiar.
And later that year, he was deployed to West Germany. However, being an alcoholic in the army does not mix very well. And he slacked very much on his duties. And then because of that, he was sent home in 1981 and received an honorable discharge.
did he commit any crimes while he was in the military?
Here's the thing. It's debated. They haven't been able to link anything back definitively, but there were people that went missing during that time in the area that he was in. However, some of them were women, and his MO is not women.
It's not women.
But it, you know, he could have been trying to experiment, figure it out. There's nothing definitively linking him to those murders. He's not been charged with. And so he goes back home to Ohio eventually after a brief stint in Miami, Florida. He partied way too much and then went home. So basically, like, at this time, he's being like passed around family members, like a really unwanted responsibility.
Ooh.
So he lives with his father and his stepmom for a time. They do not like his drinking problem. So they send him to go live with his grandma. Poor, poor grandma. This lady had to have smelled some shit in her life. So he goes to live with his grandma, which he really, really loved her. Like, it was said that they had a very close relationship. Mm. She was like the one person he actually cared about her opinion in. And he was the only she was the only one that he would ever show real affection to.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And so he would go to church with her. He had a job while he was living with her. He was a phlebotomist for 10 months while living with her. But unfortunately, during the time he was living with her, he was arrested for indecent exposure to a minor. But he moves past that. And he gets, in 1985, he gets a job at a chocolate factory.
Oh man, getting some Willy Wonka vibes. Mm-hmm. Also, Willy Wonka is kind of creepy.
He's very scary. I don't trust him.
Well, the new Johnny Depp one makes me feel like he's a little...
Yeah, he's a little strange in that one.
Yeah.
So he's back in Milwaukee now, I should add. All I can think of is like... Jeffrey Dahmer in the chocolate factory. So during this time, it said that he stole a mannequin from a store and he hid it in his closet with his grandma. Not with his grandma in the closet.
Oh, it was like he put his grandma in the closet. Mm-hmm. That
he's living
her.
With her. He's living with
okay,
her.
Okay, so, okay. But he hid it from his grandma in the closet.
In the closet. But like, he would like perform sexual acts on it. It's really weird.
On the mannequin?
Yeah.
How does that work?
I don't know.
It's plastic, right?
Yep.
Is it hollow on the inside?
Probably. I don't know.
Wouldn't that hurt your...
I don't know. He's got an obsession with like male torsos. So I'm thinking maybe it had something to do with like the torso.
But the mannequins don't have peepees.
A penis?
A penis is what I'm trying to say.
Genitalia? So again, while he's living with his grandma, he decides to start going to gay bathhouses around town. What is a gay bathhouse, you might ask?
Yeah.
It's a place where men can basically go and like have sex with each other privately and not get like shamed by the public. I did not know what a bathhouse was. But it's like it's like a bathhouse, quote, air quote. And I could be explaining this terribly wrong. This is just like a Wikipedia definition, but it's basically like you go, it's like when you go to get a massage, but like wink, wink massage.
Oh, okay,
it's like intentionally, okay. You know that you could come out with more.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wink, wink. So he starts going to these around town, which I was like, there's multiple around town in Milwaukee.
Like town,
okay.
Like-
get it, Milwaukee. but then he realizes, this isn't really good for me. I don't like this because my partners are alive and they're moving. I don't like that. So he starts drugging his partners with sleeping pills. How did he get these sleeping pills, you might ask? You didn't ask, but I'll tell you. So he went to his doctor and he was like, hey man, I'm working these real, real late shifts at the chocolate factory. So I have to have something that knocks me out during the daytime. Can you prescribe me something? And they did. But he wouldn't take those. He would give them to his partners and then he would drug them. And so this happened so many times. I think like 12 instances were recorded. The authorities of the bathhouse, like whoever owned it, they kicked him out because they're like, you have literally like 12 guys saying, hey, this man drugged me while we were together. Like, you're out, man.
Yeah.
And so he's kicked
liability.
Out. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So then he starts to like bring people back to hotel rooms and drug them there. And then again, in September of that year, he's arrested for masturbating in front of two 12-year-old boys down by a river. So he tries to get out of this by saying, I was just taking a pee and they just happened to stumble upon me.
I'm no man and I have no peepee, but I'm pretty sure a shake is a lot different than like a...
Yeah, that's what the police said too. So they caught him and his lie and they gave him 1 year probation. So now it's 1987. It's in November, November 20th. He meets Stephen Toomey at a bar and asks him to come back to his hotel room with him. And so this specific instance is interesting because Jeffrey is never charged with his murder. Spoiler alert, he gets murdered. Because, as we will see, so Steve comes back to the hotel room with him.
Okay.
According to Jeffrey Dahmer, he didn't plan on murdering him. It wasn't in his to-do list. It won't find that in his planner. But he woke up the next day to find Steve laying underneath him on the bed with his chest crushed in and a lot of heavy bruising. Blood was coming out of his mouth and Jeffrey's arms were all bruised. But Jeffrey didn't remember killing him. He didn't intend to kill him. He doesn't remember doing it, but he just woke up and he was dead.
Is it because they already got him for so many other things? They're like, okay, well, if he says he doesn't remember, like, we just won't add that to his conviction list.
I think so, which is, it's so unfortunate because everyone deserves justice. It does,
yeah, I agree.
So obviously, he's a cannibal, mm-hmm. Jeffrey. And they're wondering, like, was his chest all crushed in because he was trying to eat his heart? Because he does have a thing for eating organs. We'll find out that later. So Dahmer doesn't remember killing him, but he sure as heck remembers dismembering his body. So he removes the skin, dissolves it again, takes the bones, put them in a bag and crushes them with a sledgehammer. But he kept his skull for a while until the skull eventually like broke and then he threw it away. Mm-hmm. And then in March 24th, 1988, he meets 22-year-old Richard Guerrero. I'm so sorry. At a gay bar called the Phoenix. And so Dahmer brings this guy back to his grandma's house and offers to pay $50 to spend the night with him. Like he's paying the guy $50 to stay with him. Which I was like, Jesus, desperate? Okay. Mm-hmm. But then he drugs this guy with sleeping pills and strangles him. And then he performs sexual acts on the corpse and then dismembers the body.
And he dismembers it the same, like his method of dismemberment. Mm-hmm. Dismemberment?
Yep.
Is the same.
He's doing this all in his grandma's bathtub because he's still living with his grandma at this point. She never knew.
Oh my God.
The fuck do you not know that's going on?
Okay, but a lot of, look at all the serial killers that have wives and kids.
Yeah, but like,
And she's old.
Yeah, she's old. That's true.
You got to think about it too. It's not like some like young whippersnapper.
I'm not judging on the grandma. I'm not judging at all. I'm just like truly interested in how he was able to keep this a secret from his grandma. I feel like if I spill like, I don't know, pizza sauce on the ground, you know there's an individual in this house that's like, right there. Mm-hmm. I saw you do it. But like,
maybe because they have such a good relationship and they know them each other so well, he knows how to manipulate it to make everything seem well.
Probably.
You know what I mean? Like he knows like, oh, my grandma knows me as this boy, so I just need to be that boy.
Well, that happens again. On April 23rd, 1988, he brings home another guy, but his grandma sees him with this guy, and so he's like, oh shit, I can't kill him.
Yeah.
So he doesn't. That person lived. They don't name who it is, but they lived.
Dang.
So then a few months pass, and then in September of 1988, his grandma is like, hey dude, you got a drinking problem. And there's a lot of men coming in and out of my house. Also, your room smells like shit. Can you move out?
Lay it on.
Yeah, she's like laying all this shit on him and she's like, you gotta go, buddy. I'm sorry. And so then Dahmer moves out and he buys this one bedroom apartment and he moves in later in that September. Dahmer's out of grandma's because he's dismembering people in the bathroom and it smells bad.
Imagine if she knew that that's what he was doing and she was like, dude, too many men are coming and you're dismembering them in my restroom. Like, you gotta,
Go.
You're done.
A quote from Jeffrey Dahmer's grandma. Okay, so he moves out of the apartment and he moves out. So then 2 days later on September 27th, he's arrested for drugging and molesting a 13-year-old boy. Yeah. And so this boy was there to pose for nude photos. That is going to be his MO. He goes up to people that he knows are in need of money and he's like, hey man, I'll offer you X amount of dollars if you'll come home and let me take these pictures of you. And they do. And so Jeffrey's dad hires this attorney to defend him and he makes him go on like under this all this psychological testing, trying to probably like prove him not insane, but like
mentally unstable
to like get a lesser sentence. He does this test and the test comes back that he feels severely alienated. He's very impulsive, suspicious of others, and feels very unaccomplished in life. Ooh. Which, joke's on him. So do millennials. Get a fucking life.
We don't go around killing people in this memory.
Exactly. No. Stupid fuck. Anyways, January 30th, 1989, he pleads guilty to this crime of molesting this boy, mm-hmm. of second degree assault. And unfortunately, his sentencing was suspended until May. And so he's allowed to be out just chilling. And then on March 20th, he takes this 10-day absence from work. I'm pretty sure he's still working at the chocolate shop, the chocolate factory. Mm-hmm. And so during this time, he moves back into his grandma's house. Because apparently, I don't know, she got some Febreze and she was like, you're back. You're fine. So 2 months later, he kills a man named Anthony Spears. Anthony, he was 24 years old, a mixed gay man working towards a career in modeling. So like...
Oh, so it fits the whole like, I'll take pictures of you, mm-hmm. give you money.
Yes. And so they met March 25th at a gay bar. And according to Dahmer, he wasn't there to kill anybody. Second time we've heard him say that.
Okay.
But Sears, quote unquote, just started talking to him. And so Dahmer took this as an invitation to murder.
I wasn't trying to kill anyone, but then he came and talked to me.
And I was like, yeah, I gotta kill him.
What the fuck?
I don't know.
Okay.
He takes him back to his grandma's house. They have oral sex. And then Dahmer drugs and strangles him. Trigger warning, it's kind of graphic. He decapitates his body. And then the next morning, he removed his flesh and pulverized the bones. And then he put all this in the trash. But he kept his head and his genitals preserved in acetone and put them in a wooden box inside of his work locker.
His work locker?
His work locker.
At the chocolate factory?
Mm-hmm.
Where they make chocolate?
Mm-hmm.
He had head and... It's like dick and balls.
God.
But he... Okay.
Kept those things. And so...
Why in his work locker? Not like at his house where it's probably a little bit more private and he can like...
He's living in his grandma's right now.
But he has like his own room though, right?
I don't
like
fucking know.
Like his closet, like something.
I don't know.
Like what if your boss was like random, like, oh, we're going to do like locker checks because it's their employee. Like they're.
Wouldn't you fucking hate to be the boss that does that on that day?
Like it's a casual, like, oh, I'll just do locker checks real quick. Make sure everything's good. And you find fucking head and pee pee and balls in there.
He kept Anthony's head because he thought he was very beautiful. That's why he preserved it. Mm. Gross. And so then later on in May, as promised, he was sentenced to a 1-year sentencing at the House of Correction with a work and release order. And so he also had to become a registered sex offender and additionally take on 5 years of probation. 2 months before his release from this work camp, he was paroled. And then he moved out of his grandma's and into a new place called the Oxford Apartments, which are, it's where everything else happens.
Really? Ooh, okay.
Mm-hmm. So now Jeffrey's living in his new apartment over at the Oxford Apartments. And so then May 14th, 1990 rolls around and he murders Raymond Smith, who was a 32-year-old male sex worker. And so this is when we start to see his MO appear. So he drugged and strangled him and then took Polaroid photos of the deceased's body in really like sexual depositions before he dismembered him. And this time he kept his skull and he spray painted it. And he placed it inside of a metal filing cabinet with like a bunch of other like weird stuff that he had.
And the filing cabinet was at his house or at his?
It was at his house.
Mm-hmm. Or his apartment?
His apartment, okay. Yep. And so then a week later on May 27th, he lured a young man to his apartment, but sometimes karma just really bites you in the butt. So he's trying to lure this young man with the intention of murdering him. Mm-hmm. He tries to drug him, but he accidentally drank the drugged drink he intended to give his victim. He passed out, woke up the next day, and he found that the young man he invited stole his clothes, $300 and a watch. He didn't report this to the police, obviously.
Yeah.
But on May 29th, he reported this to his parole officer that he had been robbed, but he didn't tell that to the police. And he said he was sad.
I'm sorry. This is the man who has now brutally killed multiple men.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, someone robbed me, I'm sad.
Mm-hmm. I was trying to murder somebody by giving them a drug drink, yeah. But I accidentally drank it.
Imagine if he was just like brutally honest. I was like, well, listen, officer, I need my money.
I actually tried to drug him.
I ended up drugging myself. I killed 4 to 5 other people
mm-hmm.
that you don't know about, but I need you to get my wallet back because mm-hmm. it has my money in it.
Yep.
And my watch.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
he obviously did not learn his lesson, because in June of 1990, a little less than a month later, he lures Edward Smith to his apartment where he drugs and again strangles him. He switches it up a little bit and he puts his skeleton in the freezer for a few months to try and drain it of the moisture, which I don't know if you know how freezers work, but that's not it. But this caused the skull to weaken and not be strong anymore. And so he went to put it in the oven to like bake it, to dry it, and it exploded.
Ugh.
And he felt really, really bad about this one. He felt really bad. Not because he had murdered somebody, but because he couldn't keep any of his body parts.
So it was like a selfish feel bad. It was like, yep. Damn it. Not like a, oh, his skull exploded. That mm-hmm. really sucks for him.
Yeah. Not, oh, I murdered this person.
And yeah.
Horribly disfigured their body.
It's more like, damn it, I don't have their skull.
I don't have my prize. My trophy. Yep. And so then later on around August of this year, he lures 22-year-old Ernest Miller to his apartment. And then he says, you know, I'm going to offer you $50 if you pose for nude photos. That becomes a new thing that allows him to like lure young men to his plate.
$50 and so, like, come on, guys. Mm-hmm. If anyone offers you $50, that's way too low. Mm-hmm. Like, you better jack that shit up. Mm-hmm. Don't do it. But I'm just saying, that's...
You're done.
Oh, and around August of this year, he lures 22-year-old Ernest Miller to his apartment. And he says, you know, I'm going to give you $50 if you pose for these nude photos. And that becomes a very common, like not common, but that becomes his reoccurring like way to get young men off the streets and coming back home with him. And so he gives him 2 sleeping pills to try and knock him out, but it didn't work. He was still awake. And when this didn't work, he... trigger warning, murdered him by slashing his neck with the same knife that he used to dismember the other bodies. And so then he takes pictures again with his Polaroid camera and dismembers the rest of the body. And then he talks about how he, as a trigger warning, he would kiss the dead body and he'd talk to it a lot before he finished dismembering it. And then he kept some of Ernest's body to eat later on. And also he kept the bones. This whole episode is a walking trigger warning. It's really disgusting.
I feel like every episode we do is a trigger warning. Yeah. Because we're talking about death and assault and things like that.
I've got a few more to tell you about.
Does he eat all, like, does he eat from all of them? Or he like picks and chooses who he like eats?
He picks and chooses who he eats. I think, okay, so I think it's because he didn't start out eating them.
Oh, okay.
I think it was more like a control thing. I mean, I obviously don't know. I don't have like a psychology background. But from what I've read, he doesn't start off eating them. It's only later on, once he's done it a couple of times, that he starts testing it out. Mm. And then he keeps like a little bit from each body, but not necessarily to eat, just to keep. That's it differentiates. Later on in September, 1 month later, after murdering Ernest, September 24th, it was literally like 3 weeks later, he murders 22-year-old David Thomas. Again, he uses the whole tactic of, hey, I will pay you if you come mm-hmm. take these nudes at my apartment, and he drugs him. But then he didn't feel very attracted to him after he had drugged him. But again, he didn't want him to wake up and then
be like,
get mad about being drugged.
Yeah.
So he strangled and dismembered his body, but he didn't keep any of these body parts. He did take pictures of the body, which later on actually helps to ID him as a victim of Jeffrey Dahmer. So to get justice later on, he didn't keep any of the body parts and he didn't talk about performing any necrophiliac actions to the body. And he also mentioned not being sexually attracted to him after he was drugged. So it makes me wonder, is it the fact that they're unconscious and unmoving, or is it he has to be like sexually attracted to them before they're like that? Because you know how he talks about earlier on where he says that he wants his victims to not be a willing participant in whatever he does. He wants them to just be immobile and not moving. Is that what drives him sexually, or is it attraction and that?
I think it's attraction and that. I think he gets them, and then
because
I think
he likes them,
and I think he finds them more attractive, like the attractive level increases when he sees them unconscious.
So then Jeffrey Dahmer, after this instance, he doesn't kill again for 5 months, and he goes to his parole officer, boo hoo hoo hoo, and he goes, I'm sad. He literally goes to him and talks about being depressed, lonely, and suicidal. Boo freaking who?
As he just killed X amount of people.
Yes.
Okay. And has eaten them.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In 1991, in February, he kills 17-year-old Curtis Strotter. Mm. After, again, asking him to come over and take nude photos, he proceeds with the same method of murder. And this time, trigger warning, he keeps his skull, hands, and genitals, and he took photos of them all.
Why his hands?
I don't know. I truly don't know what makes him keep some things and not the other, because he keeps a lot of different shit, which actually later on we'll talk about. On April 7th, 1991, he lures 19-year-old Errol Lindsay to his apartment. He switches things up a little bit. So he uses the same method of like offering to pay for nudes for him to come back. He drugs him, but this time he doesn't strangle him. He drilled a hole into his skull and poured hydrochloric acid into it.
That like will fry your shit.
Yes. And it was really sad because that actually didn't kill him. He woke up during this happening and he was complaining of a headache. And then Jeffrey strangled him and killed him.
Wait, so when he woke up and was complaining of a headache, he didn't know that Jeffrey did. Like, he was like, hey, dude, my head hurts.
I think in that point he was so far gone and in pain, he probably didn't know what was happening. And so he was just talking about how his head was hurting. Oh. Like, I'm sure, I don't know the details of like how far he drilled or what he did.
Yeah.
But like, obviously you're not going to be completely coherent after having hydrochloric acid poured into your brain. But he was still conscious enough to speak words. And he was like, I have a headache. And then Jeffrey freaked out and strangled him.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. Ouch.
Yeah. Like, and then he continued to dismember the body. Around this time, the Oxford apartments started having tenants complain to the building manager about smells coming from Jeffrey's apartment, apartment 213. And so they also complained about lots of falling sounds and hearing chainsaw noises. How would you like to be this building manager?
Be like, hey, I need you to go check it out because I hear chainsaw noises and things falling and it's a really nasty smell coming from this area. I'd be like, okay.
Well, I'd be like, and couldn't be me.
Well, you should go check it out then.
You're done, Jeffrey. Get out.
You're done. Immediately. Okay. No.
I don't know if this is just because of the age that we are and the world that we live in, but like, I don't trust nobody for nothing. Like, I'm walking to work in the morning and I see a homeless man in the garbage can. I'm not getting out of my car.
See any person.
Nope, not moving. When we're sitting at home and we see someone walk down our public road or drive down, we're he's coming to kill us. Lock all the doors, turn off all the lights. What's his license plate? Who is in the car? Who's driving? How fast are they going? What time is it? I don't trust nobody on those streets. It's my favorite game to watch in the winter. See people get stuck and I don't help them.
And they do get stuck.
They do. And they're stupid for doing it. I'm sorry. Like, you don't drive down a street with 2 feet of snow when you're driving a fucking normal, regular, degular, schmegular car. Yeah. Do not even look at my street without having an SUV. Yeah. That's it. That's all I have to say. Anyways, back to the story. Not a story. It's real life. Back to this terrible tale. So that poor fucking building manager.
He's like, fuck.
Cap. The tenants are complaining of hearing falling sounds and chainsaw noises. They go up to Jeffrey and they're like, dude, what the fuck? And he goes, sorry, but that smell, my freezer broke. And also all my fish died. And they're dead. But I'll clean them up later. That's the smell. Yep. That's it. They believed him.
They're like, oh, okay.
They're like, oh yeah, dead fish, your freezer's broken. That totally explains the chainsaw noises. All my fish use chainsaws when they die too. Doesn't your refrigerator make that sound? That would be me as a building manager.
I'd be like, oh, okay, yeah.
Sure, yeah. My chainsaw freezer fish do that too. So around this time, he meets a man named Tony Hughes, brings him back to his apartment. Tony was 31 at the time, and he murders him using the same methods as he previously did. He keeps him in his bedroom on the floor, naked, his body. This is, I believe, May 24th to the 25th is when he killed Tony. On May 26th, 1991, after killing Tony Hughes, he meets Konarak Synthasmophone. I'm so sorry if I messed that up, that last name. Konarak was 14 at the time. He was very young. And he was actually the brother of one of the boys that Jeffrey Dahmer molested in 1988. Jeffrey Dahmer did not know this, but Jeffrey told him that he would give him money to come pose nude at his apartment. And Konarak was like, no, I don't really want to do that. He was very reluctant. But eventually, Jeffrey convinced him to come back. At the apartment, trigger warning, it's unconsensual assault of a minor. Dahmer drugged him and performed unconsensual oral sex on him. And then while he was drugged, he drilled a hole into his skull and injected hydrochloric acid into the frontal lobe. And before the victim was knocked out, Dahmer brought him back into his bedroom, and Konarak saw Tony's body in his bedroom, but he was so far out of it because of having freaking hydrochloric acid injected into his skull, he didn't notice anything.
Yeah.
And so then he became unconscious and then fell asleep. And so during this time, Jeffrey was like, I'm gonna go drink some beers. So he goes, gets drunk, and then he leaves his apartment to go get a drink at a bar nearby and then purchase more alcohol. And so he's gone all night into the early next morning. So early the next morning on May 27th, Dahmer returns to his apartment to find Konarak sitting naked outside talking with three very upset young women in Lao. So they're talking in a different language. They were all like the same nationality. Okay. So they're all talking.
Even though his brain was like...
Yes.
Whoa, okay.
Like Dahmer comes back and he sees him outside naked talking with these three women, and they are like freaking out all together on the sidewalk. And so Dahmer goes up to them and he's like, hey, this guy's my friend. Help me bring him back to my apartment. And they're like, no, fuck you, dude. We called 911. And so then these police officers show up and they talk about how injured Konarak is. And they're like, he's got scratch marks on his genitals. He's like all banged up. He's hurt. Like something is wrong. And so the officers' names that showed up to the scene first were John Balserzak and Joseph Gabrish. And so Dahmer, throughout this whole instance, is staying super duper calm. And he goes to the police and he's like, hey, guys, this boy, he's actually not a boy. He's 19 and he's my boyfriend. He's drunk off Jack Daniels. We had a fight. Whenever we have fights, he just drinks too much Jack Daniels. That's why he's slurring his words and he's so fucked up. Because Konarak was really... I think at this time was acting drunk because of the freaking hydrochloric acid injected into his brain. But Jeffrey was like, nah, he's actually my boyfriend. He just got super drunk. He always does this, you know, this guy.
What about the like scratches on his genitals and like things like that?
They did not care. So the women are super duper upset and they're like, look at all this stuff that's wrong with him. Like, look at him. He's like obviously very hurt. He can't go back with Jeffrey. But the officers told the women, quote, to butt out, shut the hell up and not interfere. And then three fire department officials show up and then examined him for injuries. And one of them thought that the boy needed treatment, but the police officers told them to leave. And so then Officer Richard got to the scene and then escorts Jeffrey Dahmer and the boy back to the apartment. And the women this whole time are like, look, these are the things that are wrong with him. He does not need to be going back. Like, what the hell? And Jeffrey's like, this is my boyfriend. He's drunk. Don't even worry about it. And the officers believed him.
You're done. You're done.
They're done.
They literally could have saved
him. But because of like the stigma for like homosexual men, during that time, they were like, fuck it, we don't care. That's your business, not mine. Get the hell out of it, ladies.
But at least check, he's 19. At least check some IDs.
Oh, it gets worse. It gets worse.
No, because I'm actually going to be really mad.
Worse.
I'm mad about all of them because he's a fucking shit terrible human.
It gets worse. It gets worse.
Okay.
So, Officer Richard takes them back to the apartment and Dahmer is charming the police the whole time, talking about how bad the crime in his community is and how thankful he is for the police to show up during times like this. And so Dahmer brings him back inside so that they can verify him and Konarak's relationship. What does he do? He pulls out the nude Polaroids that he had previously taken of them and shows them to the police to be like, look, this guy's my boyfriend. I wouldn't have these unless he was my boyfriend. And they're like, oh yeah, dude, keep that to yourself. Like, okay, we get it. Y'all are gay. And then one of the officers goes, I don't really notice anything too crazy in here, except it kind of smells like poop. Kind of weird.
Police smells like shit.
But he is looking around. He doesn't see anything. That smell of poop was the decomposition of Tony Hughes.
Yeah, I was like, that guy's still in his room, right?
But you know what? He fucking peeks his head in the bedroom and doesn't see him. I don't know.
Wait, the body that's on the floor?
Yep.
the dead body that's on the floor.
He peeks around the corner and he's looking around, doesn't see him.
Was he hidden or was he just blatantly like on the floor?
I don't know. But I just see he's looking, he doesn't see him, and they leave. So when they leave the apartment, the officers leave, and then Jeffrey injects more hydrochloric acid into his brain, and this time it actually kills him. And then he takes a day off of work to dismember the body. Actually, not one body, but two bodies in his apartment, and he keeps both of their skulls. And then in June of that year, June 30th, he decides he wants to take a trip to Chicago. And so he goes there and he meets Matt Turner at a bus station. And then this time he's pretending to be a photographer. So he offers Matt some money to come back to his apartment in Milwaukee and do a photo shoot. And this, he continues his previous MO of drugging, strangling, and then dismembering him. He does keep the head and organs in a plastic bag in his freezer. And July 5th, 23-year-old Jeremiah Weinberger in Chicago, he offers to bring him back to his apartment, promises to spend the weekend with him. He drugs him, and then this time a little bit different, he injected boiling hot water into his skull twice, and this put him into a coma, which he actually passed away from 2 days later. And then July 15th of that year, he meets 24-year-old Oliver Lacey, and then again same MO of offering for nude photos. He drugs him with chloroform this time, and then he calls off work. He's like, I want to spend some more time with this guy. But then he strangles him anyway. And then he performs some necrophiliac actions on the corpse and dismembered him. And this time he keeps his head and his heart in the freezer and his skeleton as well. And then 4 days later, he was fired from his job on July 19th because he was taking too much time off work.
Yeah, his job's like, yeah, this is too much.
Yeah. Again, on July 19th, the same day he was fired from his job, he murders 25-year-old Joseph Braidhoft, which he lured him to his apartment and then again strangled him. Trigger warning, a little bit nasty. It's a little bit different. He leaves his body in his bed for 2 days, and by the time he comes back to dismember it, his head had been infested with maggots.
Oh.
And he decapitated him and placed the head in his fridge. When I tell you, like, I knew about Jeffrey Dahmer, but I didn't realize how disgusting he was and how many people he ruined. It's absolutely awful. Well,
and it's just, and like, the thing is, like, his name is so big, and like, we know, everyone just knows. Like, I'm sure if you go to average person, like, do you know Jeffrey Dahmer? So they'd be like, oh, yeah, the serial killer.
Yeah.
But, like, no, like, I don't think a lot of people know these details.
I didn't know how many times he had had a run-in with the cops and not been caught.
It seems like he's a very, like,
he's very charming
person.
He's very charming.
And that's just so frustrating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, why can't all serial killers just be, like, awkward and weird and always get caught because they're so awkward and weird? Why are all the ones that we know most of the ones that are, like, so charming and so...
But you know,
like,
what?
It's so frustrating.
I don't even think he was that charming. I don't think he's a Bundy. I think Bundy is absolutely gross, but he's known for his very good looks and how easily charming he was to women. This guy is the opposite of that. He just so happens to be, like, a semi-normal looking white male that could pass as normal. I really think,
like,
it had
he just knew what words to, like, he knew how
to, I think,
to
so make, like, that'll
get away with it.
Exactly. That'll come out a little bit later when we're talking more about it. So that was July 19th. So on July 22nd, literally like a couple days later after Joseph Braidhoff's murder, he goes up to three young men that he finds and he asks them all to pose for some nude photos at his apartment for $100. But only one of them agrees. Two of the others were like, fuck you, no. So Tracy Edwards agrees to go back to his apartment. He's like, dude, there's like a nasty smell in here. And he like looks around a little bit more and he's like, dude, what the fuck is all this hydrochloric acid doing on your floor? And Jeffrey's like, oh, you know, I'm just cleaning some bricks.
Okay.
And so then Dahmer tries to distract him. He's like, hey, dude, look at all my exotic fish that I have. And so, like, while, like, Tracy's looking around trying to find these fucking fish, Dahmer comes out of nowhere and tries to handcuff him, but it doesn't work. And so, like, in this process of, like, Dahmer trying to put handcuffs on him, Tracy's like, dude, what the fuck is going on? He notices that The Exorcist is playing in the background. And then he starts looking a little bit closer at the walls and he sees all these nude posters of men on the walls. And then he's like looking a little bit harder and he sees a giant 52-gallon drum in the corner.
Oh, hell no.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what you think it
is. That means I'm about, like, that means less. It's time immediately. No, that means
you're done.
And so at this point, I think one hand was like handcuffed, but he didn't get it on the other hand. Then Dahmer pulls a knife on him. And then Edwards is like, what the fuck? At this point, like, Dahmer's like going crazy. He's like rocking back and forth on his heels, like trying to like pet him and shit, and he pets his chest and he's telling him he was going to eat his heart. And at this point, Edwards is like, fuck, I'm dealing with a crazy person. I need to preserve myself for as long as possible. I need to start like doing something. Mm-hmm. And so Edwards is trying to get him off his back and he's like, I gotta pee. Can I use your bathroom? And so Dahmer's like, yeah, sure, go for it. So he like goes, lets him use the bathroom. He comes back out and he's still holding a knife to him. And so at this whole time Tracy's like trying to tell him like, hey, I'm not running. I'm your friend. I'm not gonna go anywhere. You don't need to have the knife out. He's like trying to talk with him, build like a relationship. Yeah, yeah. Not a relationship, but like, you know, when people
trust.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And he's like, I'm not gonna run, I'm not gonna do anything. But this whole time he's thinking of like ways he can get out. He's like, okay, I can either jump out the fucking window or I'm gonna sprint out the door. So he's like thinking of all these escape plans. When they come back out after he uses the bathroom, he's like, can we go in the living room and drink a beer? It's a little bit hot in here, and that's the only room with air conditioning. And so Dahmer's like, yeah, okay, sure. And so like they go into the living room, he waits for Jeffrey Dahmer to like kind of be like off and like look somewhere else, and then he straight up punches him in the face and sprints out the front door.
Oh, so he made it out?
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah. And so that night, mm-hmm, around 11:30, July 22nd, he flags down some police officers, Robert Routh and Rolf Mueller, and he brings them back to apartment 213 and is like, hey, there's a crazy fucker in there that pulled a knife on me. The knife was in the bedroom. Go find it. And they go in and they're looking for it. And Tracy had told them like, hey, this guy tried to handcuff me, pulled a knife and told me he was going to eat my heart. Y'all need to go. You need to go investigate.
Go.
And so they go in and they're like, what the fuck? And then they find Jeffrey and he's like, yeah, I handcuffed him. But he doesn't give any explanation for why. And so they search around in his apartment and they go into his bedroom and they find the knife underneath the bed. And in searching for the knife, they find all of the Polaroid photos of all of the decomposing bodies. There was like 74 of them. And so they're like, what the fuck? So basically, when they had gone in to look for Jeffrey, they had been looking for the key to unlock the handcuffs that Tracy was in, because they tried their handcuff key and it didn't work. And so they're like searching in there. So trigger warning, when they were looking for the knife in the apartment, they find it underneath his bed. And in doing so, they find all of the Polaroids of the decomposing bodies in Jeffrey's nightstand.
Yeah.
Which he was freaking out about. He did not want them to go near that nightstand. Like, while they were looking for the key to the handcuffs, he was like trying to push that. He's like, oh, no, don't worry, it's right here, I got it for you. And they're like, no, get the fuck out of the way, Jeffrey.
They're like, yeah, no, it's
And then
it's
they find
done.
All of the photos. And so in doing this like sweep of the apartment, they find the following. Trigger warning, it gets very graphic. They find 4 severed heads, 7 skulls, 2 human hearts, arm muscle, a torso, a bag of human organs, and flesh stuck to the bottom of the freezer, 2 skeletons, severed hands, 2 severed and preserved penises, a mummified scalp, and in the 57-gallon drum, 3 more dismembered torsos dissolving in acid, and 74 Polaroid pictures. At this point, it's a little bit too clear on who the murderer is here. So,
well, but he's a gay man, so maybe this is just because apparently the other cops didn't fucking care about all this crazy shit that was going on.
No, the cops arrest him. They bring him in, and immediately Jeffrey waives his right to a lawyer. He doesn't even ask for one. He waives it because he quote unquote said he created this horror, and it only makes sense I do everything to put an end to it.
Oh, he's one of those.
Mm-hmm. So he admits to having murdered 16 men in Wisconsin and then one more victim in Ohio, which was Stephen Hicks, mm-hmm, in 1978. And so he admits to all of the necrophilia. And one thing I found super strange was, so he keeps all of these body parts because apparently he was building an altar. He wanted to build an altar for himself out of all of the body parts, which I will show you. He has this little picture. He draws it for the police. And let me tell you, it's fucking weird as shit. This is what he draws. He wants to make an altar of all of the skulls and the body parts. And he was going to like buy blue lights and put them on there. And he was going to like sit in a black leather chair. And it was his place to just like meditate and feel at peace.
Was his plan to continue to murder? Like, was it just going to be like a continuous
thing? Nope. He wanted to do it. He talks about it. He said he had such an urge. He wanted the men that he found attractive, and he wanted to be with them so bad,
but he wanted them completely. He didn't want them to have any say in it. He wanted them immobile, not alive, nothing. And he wanted them so bad it consumed his thoughts every single day. Like, it wasn't like he wanted X amount of people. He wanted all of the people he could get. And that's all he could think about. So I bet you if he wouldn't have been caught, he would have continued to kill. It's fucked. So it's so fucked. So basically during his trial in Milwaukee, his lawyers are like trying to prove him to be insane. Didn't work.
I mean, at that point, that's all you got.
But they bring in they are pulling all the shots. Like, they're getting all these psychologists and like, he's schizophrenic, he's depressed, he's got all this shit.
I could never be a lawyer, because if you like, I could never represent someone who did something like that.
I don't know how they do it. I literally
couldn't go up there and be like, Oh no, he didn't mean to. No, he was insane. He had a lapse of judgment. I could never say that. I would literally be like, Your Honor, he did it. He told me he did it. When our first meeting, he said he did it, and he's.
But I think like, at I this point, not. I think at this point, they're not trying to get him off.
No,
they're,
but I couldn't even do that.
Your job is like to keep him alive, to keep the death penalty off the table, to just get the best sentencing that you can get. Which, like, everybody,
no, I would want the worst. What's the worst you could do to this man?
Could not be a lawyer.
Let's do it.
So basically, they're trying to prove him insane. Except Jeffrey's making it a little bit difficult, because he's like, yep, it's me. I did it. I'm bad. I did it. I murdered him. He said, I created this horror and it only makes sense that I do everything to put an end to it. He's literally like, me. I did it. I'm like, the murderer.
He was depressed. Yes, I killed them.
So they're trying to prove him insane by all this different shit, except the defense is like, fuck you. No, he's not. He obviously knows right from wrong. He's saying he did it. Mm-hmm. But they're like trying to bring up all of these different schizophrenic diagnosis and all of this different stuff. And so basically they're bringing up all of these nasty nitty gritty details with the necrophilia. And so they're thinking, okay, why is he murdering all these gay men? Because he is ashamed of who he is as a person, as a gay man himself. Mm-hmm. He didn't get to be openly gay, which I'm not, maybe he did, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know the details of that, but I know like as a child he wasn't able to be. Is it because he's ashamed of who he is as a gay man himself? Like, he didn't get to claim his identity and therefore he needs to take it away from other people. And so a psychologist was brought on. His name was George Palermo. And he said that the murders were the result of a pent-up aggression within himself. He said he killed those men because he wanted to kill the source of his homosexual attraction to them. And killing them, he killed what he hated in himself. Which I was like, damn! You stabbed that knife and you twist it and you pull it right back out. That was deep. Dahmer's trial his Milwaukee murder trial lasts 2 weeks. Okay. And his sentencing was February 17th. And on that day, he requested to address the court. He said, quote, I know my time in prison will be terrible, but I deserve whatever I get because of what I've done. Thank you, Your Honor. And I am prepared for your sentence, which I know will be the maximum. I ask for no consideration.
So he's very much so like, why are we pretending? Like, why are we dragging this out? Come on, let's just get it over.
He knows he's fucked. Yeah, he's not even
trying to do the whole,
which, like, I cannot begin to even try to get inside of his head, because it makes zero sense to me. Like, he knows he's a shit horrible human being, and he's like telling the court, like, I already know you're gonna prove me guilty.
Yeah,
let's, why are like, we let, sitting around?
Like, let's just speed it up. Like, what are we doing?
And so he's sentenced to life in prison plus 10 years upon the first two counts, with remaining 13 counts carrying a mandatory sentence of life imprisonment plus 70 years. So he's never getting out.
He's
fucked. And he also is eventually convicted for the murder of Stephen in Ohio. Never getting out of prison. So he's sentenced, and his family, his mom and dad are very interesting. They are supportive of him throughout the entire thing. Not supportive as in like, we love what he did, more like like that is still our son and we love him and we are sorry for what he did, but that's still our son. They're not like the kind of people that are like, fuck it, we don't like him anymore, we don't like what he did, therefore he's not our kid anymore. Like, they're very much claiming him, they want him to be better, do better. Like, they still love him very much.
That's that a lot of people forget about the family the parents of these terrible people, because it's not always necessarily their fault, but like, and also I'm not a parent, so I can't say this, but like, if my child did those things, I find it very difficult right now, me as not a parent, besides like my cat, to be able to say like, that's still my child and I still love them. And I still, like, I think, I don't know, like, obviously I feel like I would love them, but I don't think I would be like, we want him to get help. Like, we
Love them, yeah. Jeffrey.
So mm-hmm. I don't think I'd be able to do that. I think I'd be like, you, because then it's like, okay, but those 16 men had moms and dads. And like my mm-hmm. child took, not just took like a, okay, all murder is bad, but like drunk driving or like accidental manslaughter or something like that. And it's like, it's still, life is a life and it is still very sad. And it's like, my kid did that, but he did the absolute worst.
Yeah.
To these souls.
Yeah.
Like, and he, I couldn't even.
He claims that too.
And I, exactly. Yeah, yeah. He's like, oh,
he's like, yep, I did it.
I did it. I created this mess.
He literally says, like, I've done the worst that another person can do for a human. Like, take me in, officers.
I could not. Like, I really don't think I could look my kid in the face and be like, I love you. I don't know. I think that's scary to me sometimes. Just, and again, I'm not a parent, so maybe when I become a parent, I'm gonna have this undying love for my child. But also, like, as a parent, I don't know if I could even look at the other person's parents, is I would feel guilty for whatever, because like it's my kid. I don't know, I think I would disown them. If my child was drilling holes in other people's heads and pouring chemicals and or boiling water, that's not my child.
He's very, I want to say he's very interesting, because he's not. He's just not. He's just a horrible shit human being that did terrible things. But he is different than other people that I've read about, because he knows what he did wrong. When the police were arresting him, he said, for what I did, I should be dead. He throughout his whole sentencing, throughout talks with his mom, he tells her, I'm going to get killed and I'm fine with it. Like, I need to be dead. It's such a,
like, that's such a cop out.
It is.
That's such a cop out.
It is such a cop out.
Like, oh, like, it's like, oh, just kill me. Just
it's
kill
when
me.
You apologize to somebody because you want them to forgive you, not because you're upset that you hurt them. You're seeking your own forgiveness. Like, son, nope.
It's almost like, oh, you got me. Okay, you might as well kill me. Hurry up and kill me. It's like, no, I want you to fucking be alive for the rest of your life and fucking
get. And he didn't care. He didn't care for any of those men. He just wanted their, I don't even know.
Oh, that's so gross. But like, I mean, there's other serial killers like Richard Ramirez. Like, he knew what he did was wrong. Like, he mm-hmm. didn't have like a insanity plea. Obviously,
he didn't even deny it. Bundy denied it. Dahmer is like, no, pointing with a fucking neon sign. He's like, I killed these men.
It was me. I'm blown away right now.
Spoiler alert: he's guilty.
What?
So he's literally like, I ask for no consideration. I'm guilty. Please tell me the sentencing. And so he's sentenced to life imprisonment, as we previously discussed. His parents ask for 10 minutes with him before he's sentenced, in which they go have some private time. They give him hugs. And then he's off to prison for his first day of his, actually, like, second day of prison. He's been in prison several times. While he's in prison, he becomes a born-again Christian.
I'm sorry. That is a very possible thing that you can do. I just find it ironic.
His mom and his dad are like, bro, get your shit together, y'all need Jesus. And they send him a Bible, and he's a born again Christian. He's going to mass. He's like asking for forgiveness and all this shit. But throughout this whole time, he's talking to his mom, and he's like, I don't give a fuck about what happens to me. I know I'm gonna die. Someone's gonna kill me. And for a while, he's in solitary confinement because he is enemy number one. I don't really understand the prison dynamic, but I know that child molesters, mm-hmm. people who assault people sexually, murder, like, it's, you go in with a target on your back, and he has like a huge target mm-hmm. on his back. And so for a while, he's placed under solitary confinement. He has a guard accompanying him everywhere that other people are at. But this is only for a while. Then he's a born again Christian. He starts going to church. And one day after a service, he's in the chapel, and someone tries to kill him with a razor hidden in a toothbrush. They try to slash his neck, but it was just a superficial wound. He survived. He did not die. He wasn't very hurt. I mean, he was hurt, but not very hurt. And so on the phone, talking to his mom about it, he's like, it doesn't matter, mom. I don't care if anything happens to me. She's like talking to him about, like, you need to save your soul. You need to do all this different stuff. Like, I'm worried about you. And he's like, I don't care. Later on, November 28th, 1994, Christopher Scarver beats Dahmer to death on their way to like a work thing within the prison. They were always being watched by prison guards, but they had some unwatched time in the showers, obviously for privacy reasons. So it was with Jeffrey Dahmer, Christopher Scarver, and Jesse Anderson. And Christopher beats Dahmer and Anderson to death in the showers.
Oh, with, he kills both of them?
He kills both of them.
Oh, shit.
With like a metal crowbar that he had like hidden in his pants. He's an interesting individual because he said he did it because God told him to.
God I serve don't be telling me to kill people, mm-mm. But okay.
No. And later on, like it comes out in 2015, he said he had heard that Dahmer had been taunting people within the prison. He would nibble his food into body part shapes, splatter ketchup like blood splatters, and he was just like done with his shit. He was like, he poked me in the shower. Both of them did, so I had to kill him.
Prison logic.
Yeah. And he is sentenced to two different life terms on top of his already life like term that he was serving. Because he was in jail for murdering someone else. And then he murders Jeffrey Dahmer and this other guy. So he's going to be in there for a while. Forever. And that is the end of Jeffrey Dahmer. But what a fitting end.
Oh, like what goes around comes around?
Yeah. And he actually wasn't even murdered at the scene. He lived for like a day and they sent him to the hospital. He was like beaten all in. He was discovered in the showers. The shit rocked right out of him. With a metal crowbar. His parents, they were sad about it. His mom like talked to the public and she was like, are you happy now that he's been like bludgeoned to death?
Yes.
And people were like, yeah, kind of.
Yeah, I am.
And like Milwaukee had like a whole candlelit gathering.
For who?
Not for him, but for the trauma that they had experienced as a community. Now that he was dead, they're like, he's gone. Kind of like when the fucking Munchkins had like the...
I really thought you were about to say that they... had a candlelight service for him.
No.
I was about to rip the city of Milwaukee a new one.
Nope.
Mm. Oh my god.
They did not. Nope.
Okay. So there.
It was more like a son of a bitch. Why did I turn into a southern gentleman? Son of a gun.
Son of a bitch.
Son of a bitch. What the fuck is going on? The thing that stands out from this case to other ones that we've covered is I feel like normally with any sane human, they're like, I didn't do it. It wasn't me. Or, yeah, I did, but it wasn't my fault because I'm insane.
Yeah.
He was literally, like, from day one, like, I need to be killed from the things that I have done. He admits to what he did, and he completely takes responsibility for it in the most selfish way. Like, yeah, I did it. Kill me. I don't give a fuck.
That's arguably even more frustrating.
And he does say he's sorry for it.
No, he's not.
But he's not.
He's not.
Because if he's sorry he got caught, exactly. And one of the police officers actually talks about it. They're like, if we would have showed up at his apartment like 6 months down the line, his little altar of human skulls and bones and shit would have been completed. Like, he did not give a flying fuck about any one of the people. He just wanted to make his little meditation skull altar thing. And he even said, like, every day he had this incurable drive to murder and to be with the people that he found attractive and that he couldn't stop it. I'm like, what the fuck? That's so nuts. And it's so devastating how the police on several occasions could have saved so many lives and they didn't.
Yeah.
Especially that young boy. Like, they literally had him and he was conscious and he was talking and he was
probably trying to tell them.
Which also, on a separate note, like, you're looking him over and you don't notice the fucking hole drilled into his skull.
That's what I was wondering. I wonder if he had long hair and, like, you'd have to, like...
The picture of him, it shows him with, like, a little bit, like, shaggier hair. And also, I wonder, like, when they say drilled a hole, do they mean, like, a needle? Or do they mean, like, a hole? Because if it was, like, a big needle that he was injecting it with.
Yeah.
Because, like,
I feel like you don't drill a needle, though. Like, I wonder if he used, like, a...
I feel
like maybe a small one.
I don't know. I feel like it had to have been a needle.
Yeah, that's true. For them not to notice that off the side of his head.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But long story short, he's a terrible, despicable human being. And this case enrages me.
Yeah, like I said, I knew of him. I didn't know any of these details. I started off thinking he was trash. I'm ending it thinking he's even a worse piece of trash that's ever existed.
And the other thing is, too, like, what created him? We don't know. Because it's almost like, okay, I don't want to say Jeffrey Dahmer is a pick-me girl, but he is a pick-me girl. Like, nobody likes me. I'm so alone. I'm so sad. Mm-hmm. Boo-hoo.
He definitely was being a little two-faced with the whole, like,
I'm sad. I'm depressed. Yeah, aren't we all, Jeffrey? Okay? You don't see me out there murdering people and drilling hydrochloric acid skulls. Okay, get your shit together. Chocolate factory working motherfuckers. You're not special.
Special. So that's all that we have for this week's episode and our comeback episode, which is like we are coming back strong. It feels good to record again. I'm really happy that we did this. But if you guys liked this episode, show us some love at our Instagram.
If you didn't, like this episode, show us some love, please.
Just please show us love. I think the moral of the story is that we need love from you. But if you're not following us on Instagram, you should be. It's at XOXO Sinister Sisters. There we post like the audio clips of the episodes as well as some new content that we're bringing out. I'm not going to say it yet because also, where we post a drink of the week. So if you ever, we post really cool drinks or M makes really cool drinks and there we'll have like the picture of the drink. So what it should look like as well as the ingredients and the directions on how to make it. So head over to Instagram again at XOXO Sinister Sisters to find that information and to give us a follow. We are also a part of a media studio. So if you listen to this entire podcast and you don't like it, which is kind of rude, but you don't like it, we have several sister podcasts that are equally as great, equally as amazing. And you can find all their information on the Daydream Media Studio, which is at Daydream Media Studio on Instagram. And there, again, you can find our sister podcast and hopefully there will be a podcast that you like. But I really think you should like ours. I think we're going to wrap this up because we've been talking for a really long time and we also have been drinking straight vodka with Celsius. And that honestly might not be the best idea. But join us next week as we talk about another piece of trash.
Yeah.
Okay, bye.